It's a great, rainy, overcast Monday morning in West London. I'm Gab. He's Jules. Gab, do you think the sky is crying because Cristiano's out of the Euros?
Maybe. That's
possibly. We'll be getting into that.
No, only joking.
Exactly. Oh, there'll be plenty of De Boer to come. But we have a tremendous show because the Euros in full swing. We'll be getting into Belgium and Portugal. We'll be getting into looking ahead to Germany and England. I'd say that's pretty big. Mm-hmm. Plenty of quick hits. Italy with a reality check.
Yeah.
So let's do this. Now, Belgium and Portugal, I thought this was... Portugal leave us from the Euros. We can discuss Fernando Santos making curious things. But again,
yes, please.
I was stuck with the fact this team is so much better than the team that actually won the Euros in 2016. That's just football, right?
It is. I mean, they've got more ballers than they had 5 years ago, without a doubt. And we've said from the beginning, and I'm not trying to... for us to be smug and say, we told you before, but you don't, it's not a switch. You just don't press the button and suddenly you switch and go from a very defensive approach, very conservative approach, to hey, free-flying football, all good. It doesn't work like this. They tried, didn't work. They tried to go back to what they used to before. And as we saw against Belgium, didn't work. They could have scored. Of course they could. And they had a higher expected goals than
Belgium. They deserve to take this game into extra time.
Yeah, they deserve the goal for sure. And they certainly didn't deserve to go out the way they did. But I think there was something wrong. There had been something wrong in there. Whether Fernando Santos should have prepared for this kind of scenario before, and I don't think he did. And then, I mean, what is he doing with André Silva and choices like that? I mean, how can you
be not playing André Silva?
Yeah, how can you be 1-0 down, clearly on top, and waiting that long again to bring him on? And then when he's on, you see the differences that he can make. I don't get it.
See, I thought that this was the game, especially when you play three central midfielders, where you're really putting more pressure on Cristiano. And, you know, playing him without a center forward, I thought many times you saw him dropping off, trying to set up Jota or Bernardo coming from the wings, except they never came. Because he just couldn't find the space. I thought the use of Rafael Guerreiro was very disappointing. He's a phenomenal player. He showed it again. His weaker foot. He hits the post. We'll get into all that. But what I want to turn around a little bit is also talk a little bit about Belgium, because I know you spent some time with Roberto Martinez. First question: did you expect us that we would see the Verminator back, the star of Vissel Kobe back in the lineup in a game like this?
No, I didn't, and he did ever so well.
He did his job.
In this sort of sweeper role where it's easier for him because everything comes his way and he's got more time and he has more space as well because he's a bit behind everyone. But he did great, and I think Martinez wanted just some leadership. That's what he wanted. I think he felt that maybe...
The leadership thing. Okay, I know managers, blah, 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 that's what they say. You have Vertonghen and Alderweireld.
Yeah, you can
and you
never
still
have
need more
too much. Of course, experience. I think that back three had 300 caps and 105 years old or something like that.
Could it be something simpler that maybe Denayer and Boyata just weren't getting it done for him?
But also because I think they lack experience at that kind of level. And maybe that was the difference was. I think technically Denayer is a much better defender than Vermaelen right now. And he has played for the last 2 years at a much higher level than in Japan. No offense to the Japanese league.
Although he never played with Iniesta. I have to ask, though, to alarm him, we'll be talking later about the reality check for Italy. Is there a reality check for Belgium here? Or does it all go into everything was great as long as De Bruyne was on the pitch, De Bruyne goes off, and then everybody struggles. And now, obviously, we don't know if De Bruyne, we probably won't see him again in this tournament. Mm. That's a huge blow.
Did you think he was really great when he was on the pitch?
Yeah, well,
he was very minimalist. I just think, and I tweeted it, and some people agreed, others disagreed, this was very France 2018 from Belgium yesterday. One shot on target, one goal. You conceded some chances, more than maybe the French did 3 years ago.
They conceded a lot more after De Bruyne went off, is the point I'm
making.
True,
but even when he wasn't there, you could not tell me that they created so much so much better and everything. So I just think that this team has changed since that defeat against the French and are very much more efficient in what they want to do than what they used to before, and they're very happy to give you the ball and, I mean, concede less chances than what they did against Portugal, but very much I think this is the approach, and it'll be the same against Italy in the quarterfinals.
What makes me uncomfortable is I don't know that this team is good at being minimalist and efficient. I don't know that this is what it's built on. I don't know that it plays to their strengths, even without De Bruyne. Sure, you can do that, and then, you know, maybe next game you play Doku or whatever, and you know, you go for pace and you're solid, maybe stick a Donker in there for good times. But it's not what got you there. And it might work against Italy, but then when you start playing better teams, you might lose that war of attrition.
But did you think that they would have 40% of the ball, Belgium, in a game like this?
No. I mean, a lot of that obviously came afterwards, but no. Yeah. I would have never expected that. And I'm not sure Roberto is happy with that, even though that may have been his game plan.
Yeah.
Maybe he feels a little bit dirty with that. I don't know. All right, Joes, I want to stick with this, the Belgium approach, because you're convinced that this is sort of some fundamental philosophical change from Roberto. I'll say this. If this is what he was trying to do, I don't think this is the game in which you do it. And the reason you don't do it in this game is that if you want to turn into a war of attrition, Portugal's not there. Portugal became champions last time around by winning all those wars of attrition. With Portugal, you always have the risk of Cristiano popping up in the box with a header or a penalty, yeah, or a free kick. They have individual match winners. Pepe comes into the box, starts some, well, which he did anyway, on multiple occasions. I mean, so you do the war of attrition against a team that's going to come out and run at you and attack you. Do the war of attrition against Italy and maybe get that, which maybe they will. But why do it against Portugal?
I don't know. I just think, so in the interview we did, he said, we have a DNA which is individual talent. And very much like, give the ball to De Bruyne and Hazard and Lukaku and they will do, you don't have to work something very complicated collectively. Let's put it that way. And I was like, okay, great. I said, but would you play again then against France, having 60% of the ball almost, and having maybe being the better team and just being done on one shot that you consider one goal and then you're done? And he said, what I want from the boys is to learn from that game, specifically that game, that France game, what we did that was wrong and what we would not do again. So then when we get into the similar situation, then we do it differently and this time we go through and we win. And for me, yesterday watching the game, and I don't think, you're right, I don't think the game plan was, sit back.
You do that against France, you lose. You do that against France, sorry, maybe you don't definitely lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be interesting, but France have more individual match winners.
I don't think they can defend like the French did in 2018.
No, they can't. There's no way they can.
But then yesterday, it was very much the feeling of like, we're happy to give you the ball, we're in the lead, and now we're going to close the shop, and this is it. They half closed the shop because they could easily have considered one or two.
Yeah, easily.
But it felt very much like, I mean, that second half was like, there was nothing with the ball from Belgium.
And even the goal, all right, the Thorgan Hazard goal, my first instinct when I saw it was to blame Rui Patricio. And the ball does pass really close to him.
It should still be the case because he was asleep.
But you watch the replay.
No.
There's two things. One is he hits the ball really hard.
Yeah.
And it takes a very nasty swerve. I've heard goalkeepers, say it's a goalkeeper's union. He takes a step one way, little hop step one way, and then he doesn't get to it the other way. But it was a very central shot.
It was very central. It's right by him. I know he swerved, but it's right by him as well. And I just think he's always on his line. He's always too deep in his goal, I think. If he had been even half a yard ahead of the line, he would have saved it.
What I thought was fascinating about this was at the end, I mean, I'd say there was maybe the first half or the second half, I thought the game really turned into something else, like not a pleasant game.
Yeah, no.
And then at the end, it was like they lose the screws. And Fernando Santos did what Yogi Löw did in the comeback against Hungary, right? He basically kept Rui Patricio on his back four, kept Cristiano, obviously, and he changed five dudes in the middle.
Yeah.
It was too much. I mean, I didn't see the need to take off Renato Sanchez, for example.
No need. He was their best player.
But it led to a very disjointed game at the end where I thought Belgium could have scored a couple. They had a couple breakaways with Lukaku.
And Carrasco,
And the Carrasco one, I mean, every concern that we've ever had about this guy and his obsession with dribbling, it was like, you just knew Roberto's head was about to explode, especially now that it's shaven. But equally, Portugal could have had their chances at the other end as well.
They had, I mean...
Anything could have happened, which was kind of what makes these Euro games fun, right?
It was good. Yeah. And Guerrero hit the post, as we mentioned earlier. You had the Ruben Diaz header. You had the Andre Silva sort of sliding shot with Courtois just coming to get the ball as well. You had a few good things. Joao Felix, why is Joao Felix playing that game? Oh, no, that's not so much the question, Gab. Why have you never played him in this tournament so far? For a strange reason, you even put him in the stands for your first game. And yet, when you need a goal, you're thinking, hang on, who is on top form? Who is full of confidence? Let me finish. Who is really full of confidence? Who's going to show and step on this pitch and make a difference? Well, hey, Joao, I know I've hardly spoken to you all tournament, but hey, come here and go and win the game for me. What is this? What kind of management is this?
I can answer this. At the last Euros, I had the opportunity to spend quite a bit of time around the Portuguese team. My friend worked for the Portuguese FA at the time, and they really emphasized team spirit and unity. And I think Fernando Santos was a very traditional man, sort of has his own kind of spirituality as well.
Okay, I don't know where this is going, but this better be good. Go on.
No, where I'm going with it is I think he likes to stick to the people who did it for him, before. Right. And if that means sticking with Bernardo Silva, if that means sort of trying to crowbar Bruno Fernandes into the lineup, if that means wheeling out João Moutinho, who I really did not need to see in this game.
Yeah. No, but that's fine. But why João Felix then? Why'd you bring him on for the last half hour when you've ignored him for the whole tournament?
Because you're desperate at that stage.
But desperation, as a manager of that level, desperation should not be a factor of what changes you make and what shape your team gets into.
Maybe it shouldn't, but these people are humans. We see this all the time. And why did Yogi Löw send on freaking Kevin Volland and whatever? I was expecting to see Carsten Janker out there
Minute. I know, but like, I don't know. Even Sergio Oliveira, to a certain extent, I was like,
well, because you've seen Sergio Oliveira score from long range, and I think at this level, knockout international football, these managers know that it all depends on a moment, and they're willing sometimes to take chances that they wouldn't do at club level. At club level, you might say, "Well, I'm playing in another week. I want to keep my shape. I want to execute what we've been working on all season."
Maybe.
Here, they're like, "Oh, João Felix. Sometimes he creates out of nothing, and it's hard to get the ball off him. Let's throw him on there." I agree with you.
Yeah, but why? And Andre Silva again, for me, is the worst. You cannot have the best striker in the Bundesliga, not called Erling or Robert, on your bench for 80 minutes every game, even when you're losing, and then just thinking, "Oh, the last 10 minutes." Oh, go and try to do something. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. And for me, Portugal's failure is Fernando Santos' failure in this tournament. I don't think, and we said it many times, Gab, that this formation suited Cristiano in the first place. Yet, he kept playing him on his own up front. And I know he scored 5 goals in 4 games now out of the 7 that Portugal scored. But, you know, we know how he scored.
3 of them were penalties and the others garbage time.
Yeah.
I mean, one of them he created himself. Not a knock on him. But it's not like his goals came because, like you said, it's not like his goals came because he was playing center forward and Portugal had this great service to him and he simply finished it off.
Yeah.
You know, that applies to one of those goals, I would argue, the one where he had the 1-2 with Rafa Silva and against Hungary. The other 4 goals had nothing to do with him playing center forward.
None at all. And I just think Fernando Santos is 66. His moment of glory was 2016, no doubt at all. I just don't think that right now he can take this very, very talented young team, because Cristiano maybe will be in Qatar 2022 and then that's it. Forward, I just don't think it is. And Portugal have so many bright managers. They've got such a great school of management, like of forming management, producing managers. It's extraordinary. And yet, I could not imagine him staying in his position.
We've talked about Palhinha being in there. I appreciate it's a physical, demanding position and whatever. Yeah. But I felt like. I wouldn't say he fouled somebody every other minute, because Felix Brick seemed to not call any fouls for the entire first half.
Yeah, that was interesting.
But he was just hacking away. And there was that one incident where Lukaku was on the break, where Lukaku was pulled back. Very obviously on his shirt.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, a different striker goes down and that's a booking, maybe even a sending off if you think it's a clear chance. I mean, maybe it wasn't, but still, right?
Yeah,
this one. Yellow. Lukaku too big and strong, maybe he didn't even feel the pull, or maybe he's just too much of a fair
guy. But it's not because he doesn't go down that you can't give the foul anyway.
No, but that, I don't understand how you miss a shirt fold like that, because these shirts extend. I don't think this was, Felix Brink is a phenomenal referee. This was not a very, very good game.
No.
In fact, it was a very poor game.
Yeah. From and him. I think Palinha, we will all remember him as the one who injured Kevin De Bruyne in the first half as well, because he's that tackle. I know he gets a bit of the ball, and I know it's not his fault if he injures Kevin De Bruyne, but that's the fact. That's the tackle that injured Kevin De Bruyne, yeah, in that game. And as you mentioned, we don't know if we will see him again in the tournament.
Two more points for me on the subject related to it. One is Eden Hazard. I thought somebody said, right, oh, this is the best game Eden Hazard has played in Spain. <You know?
Yeah. laughs> Good point. Very
He's
good.
Not the at Eden Hazard levels yet, but he is approaching it. He's
some of
definitely
the first
approaching
touches
it.
And little moves that he had with the ball not to lose it was pretty special.
And I kind of feel that, all right, De Bruyne is very important to this team, yeah, but that is a position where you have alternatives. I'm going to assume that Hazard's fit, and that, you know, he was just kind of fondling his buttock for his own.
He did
amusement.
Say on Belgian television that he felt something, and he could not say anything, but
all right,
he didn't look optimistic.
We're going to run through scenarios closer to the time when we preview their game against Italy on Friday. But I just say, like, Hazard can be a real value added for this team.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
I got to talk about Pep as well, because we praised him when he put in those heroic performances in the Champions League. It's fantastic. 30 years old. Yeah. He keeps going. At the end, he was involved in everything. I don't have a problem with him being
hacking Torgan Hazard on
what I do have an issue with is he should have been sent off there, right?
Yeah.
Like, I and this is my issue with Sergio Ramos as well, when he does great things, but then he also gets caught so many times. If Pep gets sent off in that moment, right, the 1-0 down, there was, what, 3 or 4 minutes left to go?
Yeah.
Somehow Cristiano scores an equalizer, and it's 1-1. Now you're down to 10 men. You've got half an hour to play of extra time. And how does that help you? That was a pure stir things up, serve no purpose foul, right? Which
stupid.
Almost led to,
Come
what were you
stupid.
Hoping? Like, they were going to send three guys off from each team? And
oh,
then
what? Was it to make a point? To say, what? Like, hey, we're here. We're solid. You know, we're
I mean, I find it extraordinary, because to me it says you only get to play at this level until you're 38 if you've got tremendous discipline, right? Mental,
yeah,
physical,
oh,
and so on.
Completely.
And yet, in this key moment, you almost throw it all away. This could have been his last gesture in, yeah, his international career. Kind of reminded me of somebody headbutting an opponent in a World Cup final.
Can't remember that. Just can't remember that.
I don't know about that.
Frustration sometimes, you know.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Tuesday afternoon at Wembley, Germany versus England. Now, I'm going to take a little personal note in,
yeah,
this, because I think this is, in terms of box office, the biggest game
biggest.
Of the round. We've both lived in this country, in England, for many, many years, so we're very well aware of the psychodrama, this rivalry with Germany. Now, yeah, I want to stress this to get this out of the way, first and foremost. If you ask Holland who their biggest footballing rivals are, they will say Germany, as chronicled by one Simon Cooper.
Yeah.
If you ask Italy, maybe just the fact that we've both won 4 World Cups, we will say Germany. And we've had many historic games,
yes,
against them,
course,
including, you know, the game of the century,
yeah,
1970. I'm assuming, being French, you guys had
very much so. Very
issue,
much
right,
so.
With issues with Germany?
Yeah, 82, 86,
so,
et cetera.
England obviously see themselves. I want to think all these countries in Europe have this one-way rivalry with Germany. And I think Germany, they're a little bit like the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC East, right? Yeah. You know, they don't really care. Everybody sees them as their... These are all one-way rivalries, I think, is what I'm driving at.
So the way
we live this psychodrama in this Anglo press that we're here, and they're really turning the screws between yesterday
and today. Which we knew they would.
We knew they would, and it's part of the ritual, it's part of the fun of the Euros. Yep. I'm saying it's not really being felt in the same way in Germany.
Definitely.
I'm speaking to German colleagues. They're concerned. They're concerned that Löw is gonna fizzle out. They're concerned of the performances they saw last time round. Yeah. They're having different types of debates. They don't, you know, they respect England. They know 1966, the Wembley goal that maybe shouldn't have stood and whatever. But they have their own history, is what I'm driving at.
Yeah, and the weight of history. And certainly, I've seen someone saying that there's a curse from Germany over England, and that, those kind of words don't come up in the German media or among German people either. It's very much here. And I think for me, the key of this game is a 50-50 on paper. You've got great players in both teams. Maybe a bit more momentum for England, but it was not great in the group stages either. And certainly England never had a performance like the Germans had against Portugal, which was really convincing. Okay, they could not follow it up, but still, it was there. We haven't seen that from England. For me, the key of this game, however, is how well you will deal and cope with expectation and pressure with all that weight of history of the past. And I know a lot of the England players were not born in 1990 or in 1996 or, you know, whatever. But they all know the stories. They all know the penalty shootouts. They all know the heartbreak. They all know the scars. They all know all of that. And I just think that this is already a huge part of this game. And the team that will deal the best with it, and for me, it will be the Germans, because they've got that mentality in them anyway. The team that will deal the best with that will win this game.
I was sort of looking back through past results, because people love bringing this up. England have actually beaten Germany in Charleroi in, I think it was Euro 2000. Although that was the weird one where England somehow still got eliminated. The Phil Neville Euros, as I think it's known. Their record against Germany at Wembley when they have played, not good.
No. The Germans say Wembley is like a German stadium.
That's,
I feel at home. I can see.
That's the kind of stuff. That's bulletin board material.
Exactly.
If you're at Gareth Southgate, you know, you go there and you say, this is our house. Nobody comes to our house and pushes us around.
Yeah.
And for all the deficiencies we found with England, they have yet to concede a goal in this tournament in their house, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty huge. That bodes well.
But then everywhere he says, oh, Gareth Southgate 25 years ago, Mr. Penn, in your house against the Germans.
Gareth Southgate strikes to me like a man who is very spiritual, very zen. Whether he's been through a whole bunch of therapy following that or not, I don't know. But I don't think it's affecting Gareth Southgate, and I don't think it diminishes his message. What would be more of a concern to me is a stat, which I thought was absolutely incredible. Since Harry Kane scored that winner against Tunisia in 2018, England have played 11 games in major tournaments, counting the Nations League. In those 11 games, they have scored, after minute 61, they have scored 0 goals, and they've conceded 8.
Yeah,
that is the thought that would keep me up at night.
Yeah,
why?
Completely. I don't want to be bashing every single manager that we mentioned on the show, Gab, or head coaches. I just don't think there's enough of a structure in this team to have a much better control of second halves in games, especially games when they're ahead. Because if you look at a lot of those games, they go ahead and then they concede goals, and either it's a draw or they end up losing the game, i.e. the World Cup semi-final against Croatia. Mm. So far in this tournament, that has not happened. They took the lead against Croatia, kept the lead. They took the lead against the Czech Republic, take the lead, no problem. Let's see against Germany if that happens again. But they certainly had issues with controlling games, seeing out games, and dealing with pressure that the opposition can put on you in second halves, which is what they do if they're behind.
Okay, Jules, just sticking with that stat. I'm very skeptical when people pull up stuff about, you know, statistics like so-and-so haven't beaten anybody since, you know, 1954 in the home nation's share. Because they don't care. Different players, different times.
True.
But this statistic is a concern. It's not normal because it's the same group of players, the same manager. It's 11 games where in the last half hour of a game, they haven't scored and they have conceded eight times in 11 matches. And as you said, they were ahead in many of those. And I would have thought, even if you're going to defend deep to protect your lead, as they've done in certain games, I mean, it's Czech Republic, it looked to me like they got super conservative at the end.
Zero expected goals in the second half, let's not forget.
I mean,
no shots.
How did you even do that?
How at this level you can have that?
Especially because they have speedy counterattackers. I mean, check. Maybe not Kane, but between Sterling, Sancho if they want him, Rashford.
Saka
if he plays. You got some wheels out there.
Completely.
It's weird, isn't it?
Completely weird. It's completely weird. I think
it's counterintuitive.
Yeah, and it's not using all the talent that you have at your disposal. But again, I don't think Southgate is a good head coach. He's a very good coach, a very good manager.
He's a good person.
He's a good person, but I don't think it's enough when you reach a certain level. And I think that stats shows it so well, Gab. Why would those second halves always have the same pattern? Why did you stop playing? Why do you not go for a second goal against the Czech? It could have cost you. And it cost you before because, as we said, you keep getting pegged back. I don't know why you don't go for more. You keep going, you keep attacking. And even if you change a bit, the way you play on the counter, use that, work on that.
It's just weird. 11 games is a lot.
I just hope that it will change and that Southgate will be on top of his game for this Germany.
The flip side of that, I'm just very basic math, is that if you've conceded eight times in the last third of a match, in 11 games, that's the equivalent of, if you were defending like that throughout the 90 minutes, that would mean you've conceded 24 times in 11 games, which is more than conceding two goals a game. You cannot afford to do that if you're a top side, if you want to win things. You cannot concede more than two goals a game.
You can't. And it can't be fitness reasons because they don't press or certainly don't press enough. So they have a spell of 10, 15 minutes maybe where they go high and it's quite intense. But then they can't be tired for the last hour because they don't do that enough anyway.
Other mystery, which we've touched upon before, I still don't understand how it's possible that Billy Gilmour tests positive for COVID. None of his teammates have to self-isolate, but Ben Chilwell and Mason Mount do. This has had a serious knock-on effect because one of the things that I took it for granted, Mount comes out of quarantine at midnight the day before the game, so 17 hours before kickoff. It's not like he's literally been in a box. He's been self-isolating, right? So he's had the opportunity to train in smaller groups with coaches, socially distanced, whatever. So I took it for granted that this dude's going to come straight into the lineup. But then the story in the media was, we have to check on his mental health because he's been separated from the others. It's a big concern. Are we serious? You can't.
I don't think you can play him, guys.
I mean, unless he's exhibited signs that he's been affected by this.
But he's not. He's trained on his own for a week.
So what's the problem?
I tell you the problem. I would hope that in the last week, certainly after the Czech Republic game, Southgate has worked with the starting 11 for this Germany game.
You think so? He didn't work with the starting 11 in the two friendlies leading up to the tournament because he couldn't. Didn't seem to affect.
I know, but now we're talking Euros last 16 against Germany at Wembley.
Right.
So I would really hope, especially if he changes the formation and go to a back three, that he's worked with those players, like every head coach does in the whole world, preparing for this game the days before the game, going, and they all do it. You play your starters against your subs for obvious reasons, to get them all together, to work on certain things.
I think Mount's job, if he plays, I think he should play, is going to be the same job he had against Croatia in the opening game. You're going to go up Ilkay Gundogan's backside and just press the life out of him wherever he goes. That's going to force Germany, hopefully, if the plan works, to play through Toni Kroos, who's obviously equally good passer but less mobile.
Yeah.
And then you leave Phillips to deal with him. And then hopefully Germany aren't going to have those spells of possession. You're going to blunt their attacking impetus. Mount, to me, seems ideal for that role. He's done it before. He's done it for Chelsea. He'll also give you something attacking if you need it.
But that
I don't know. That's a big call.
If you don't go to a back three.
Okay. So let's imagine this. So we think if he does go to a back three, it is to match Germany's 3-4-3. Do we assume Walker will be the third central defender?
I think so.
So we'd have Pickford in goal. And we're purely projecting here. You can laugh at us if we get these predictions wrong. So we're thinking Walker, Stones, Maguire.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So one question in that. Stones in the middle of the three, I presume, right? Okay. At that point, you have a call to make with your wing backs. Because were it up to me, I'd go with Reece James and Ben Chilwell. But it's not up to me because...
But you can't have Ben Chilwell cannot play. He'd been self-isolating and he had not played at all.
I did the mystery self-isolation rules and the fact he hasn't played at all. He can't play. That's right. Luke Shaw, yeah. And then on the right, I would assume he might lean Trippier for his delivery because that seems to be so important to him over Reece James. I'd go James, but Trippier, yeah?
I would have gone Trippier...
Okay, there you go. So you think
but before the Czech Republic game, and then when I saw that Reece James was playing that Czech Republic game, making it 2-2,
right.
I'm thinking that maybe Reece James is ahead. And I really hope that Southgate sees the light and start Reece James.
Okay. In front, we assume Declan Rice again.
Yeah, double pivot, you know.
He's not going to go Rice Henderson. That would be...
He would go Rice and Phillips every day because that's the conservative guy. Where's my sexy football?
Jordan Henderson out of the picture, right? Captain Courageous back, whatever. But you don't think he's going to?
I don't think
he's going to stick to what's worked for him so far.
Yeah, I would like Henderson to start with either Rice or Phillips, but I don't think he will.
Okay, so if you go Rice and Phillips, then all of a sudden you only have three spots left in your team. Mm-hmm. One is going to go to Harry Kane, center forward. There's no argument there.
Of course,
we can debate we'll debate after the fact whether it's the right choice or not. But then you only have two spots left.
Well, one because Raheem Sterling has one guaranteed.
Because you scored two goals in three games.
Because he loves him.
Okay.
So it's only one left for basically Foden, Grealish, Sancho, Saka, potentially Henderson if you want to play with a 3-5-2.
Think of what you're saying. I hope your lineup is wrong.
Yeah.
Because that would mean that the position in which you're strongest, attacking midfield, stroke wingers. Mm. You've concocted a lineup where basically you have as few of them as possible on the pitch.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. And that's why I really hope he doesn't play that three at the back. And I really hope he goes 4-3-3 attacking, because this is a team that if you attack them,
exactly,
they could crumble. But because he's Gareth Southgate, and I think because he's the most conservative head coach one of the most that we've seen in this tournament, I really fear... These three at the back. I've got it somewhere in my head. I know they've tried their training. And I just think that is what we could be seeing.
Luke Shaw, more suited to a four. Trippier has played a four. He's played plenty of four. Yeah. He can easily play four. I'm with you. If you don't like Trippier, then if you want to be a little more conservative, play Walker right back. You're not putting in any crosses anywhere. You're putting almost no crosses in this tournament.
You tell them not to go over the halfway line. So,
I agree with you. I'd like to see something more positive.
Oh, come on.
I'd like to see 4-3-3. I called it a 4-1-4-1 against Croatia. It seemed to make more sense to me. Germany. After the debacle.
Yeah.
I have no idea. He's sphinx-like, inscrutable. No, honestly, I don't know what goes on in that man's head. If England play the back four. Now, obviously, we talked about how the Gosens-Kimmich wingback thing works extremely well against back fours, especially with attacking fullbacks. England, whether they play three or four, won't have attacking fullbacks.
No.
So, does he change it?
I think that this is the big boys tournament, right? And I just think, again, and we go back to what we've been saying, and it's boring, but Joshua Kimmich, he cannot be the best holding midfielder in the world and not play holding midfielder in a game like this. I'm sorry, play Ginter right back. I don't care. He's a good defender. I know he's not the quickest, but he's a good defender. He's intelligent. His positioning is usually good. Play him there. Trust Hummels and Rudiger for this game. Come on. And then play Kimmich in midfield in a 4-3-3 where you're going to get the best out of Gundogan and Kroos.
And you play Gosens at left back.
And you play Gosens.
Even though he's never done that.
It doesn't matter. I mean, Atalanta, I've played a little bit with the back four this season.
Yeah, I don't think that often with Gosens.
But still, I think he can be there. He can do that.
But then if you do that, then you run into another problem. which is just a numbers game in midfield. Because if you go 4-3-3, yeah, fine. You've got Kimmich, Gundogan, and Kroos, and you have Skoretzka.
Skoretzka is your impact sub. No problem. Bring him on after an hour. Gundogan will last an hour.
Okay.
Gundogan will last an hour. Then you bring Goretzka in.
Fine, but then you become a very, very narrow team, right? If you go 4-3-3, because I don't know if Muller's coming back into the lineup. Personally, I feel better when he's there.
Yeah, me too.
But if we go back to this Muller and Havertz,
Gnabry
and Gnabry front three, that was a very central front three, which was fine when you had Kimmich and Gosens.
But you could still have attacking fullbacks even in the four.
One of them is Ginter?
No, but certainly Gosens. Gosens can be quite focused going forwards.
Getting into sophisticated stuff with shifts where it's a three.
And you know he's not going to change. He's going to be a back three anyway. With Kimmich, I'll right wing back.
I don't think he's going to change. You know what? I'd be tempted to ask you for prediction, but you know what? We've already told you how we think the game's going to go.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about our predictions. All right, enough Germany, enough England. Jules, how about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
Now, it wasn't quite as swashbuckling as the group stage performances, but Italy nevertheless advanced past Austria 2-1 and on to the quarterfinal where they'll face Belgium on Friday. Jules, this was a reality check.
It was, Gab. I mean, you were there and you would tell us as well what you made of it. I just thought, it's what we've been saying. The Euro started then. Almost what you did before in the group stages kind of didn't count because the pressure was different. And I think you saw that this very young Italian team, only Bonucci in the starting 11, had played a knockout competitive game with the national team before. And you could tell. You could tell this was not the same. You know, you feel the pressure. There was a lot of expectations. There was a lot of tension. And Austria played well.
Yeah,
defensive, the way they defended and the way they set up. And I just think great for them that they find a way, they find an answer, they find a solution to the problems that Austria brought them with. And it would be good. It's a great learning curve, great experience to win a game like this, I think, for these young players.
I completely agree. It's a great learning experience if you can learn from it. And
yeah.
I think Mancini now needs to learn from it and I think he's learned from it, but he needs to teach the right lessons of players, make the right calls. Austria, very simple game plan.
Of course.
They also defended, but they said, you know what? Let's go impress the life out of Jorginho and Verratti, which is something the group stage opponents couldn't do effectively.
Yeah.
In the second half, Austria certainly had a ton of chances. Italy saved by VAR on more than one occasion. I think this gives you a lot of food for thought.
Please, start Chiesa now. I love Berardi. We all do. Great season with Sassuolo, but Chiesa, he's got something special, more than an impact sub. Please.
Yeah, I'd consider starting Chiesa instead of Insigne, but I'm in the minority here.
Denmark, demolished Wales 4-0. Mrs. Zell was really sad. Dolberg, Damsgaard, Mele, Gab. Is this all coming together for a fairy tale for Denmark?
I mean, again, we talked about this before after the resounding win in the final group game. It does have the markings of a fairy tale. Now, I also got slaughtered by some of your Welsh mates for suggesting that Wales aren't particularly good. I don't think they were particularly good at all in this game.
No, they were not.
Aaron Ramsey especially. I thought there was a disappearing act. But that said, there is talent here. I mean, I don't know how far they can go, but you get that role. You've got a really solid defense. You've got a lot of awkward matchups. You've got a lot of height on this team.
Yeah, a lot of energy as well.
Into it. Mele's been on fire.
Yeah.
Damsgaard, we love. And they somehow pulled Dolberg out of the hat, too, which I was not expecting.
No. And even Braithwaite scored. So, hey, you know, it's so great. No, it's true. And now they play Czech Republic, so.
I think Braithwaite has slightly more talented teammates when he plays with Barcelona. But you're right. Play Czech Republic.
Yeah.
I mean, on paper, it's a very good opportunity.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of Wales, Gareth Bale is having a rough time. He stormed out of an interview when he was asked about his future. And Schalke trolled him, I don't know if you saw this, Jules, by saying they were ready for him and posting a picture of a golf course on social media. Schalke, of course, relegated to the second division.
Yeah.
This is a bit cruel and disrespectful.
Why are they getting involved?
German humor. So lustig und komisch.
Bale should have trolled them when they lost 50 games in a row or something to be the worst team in Bundesliga history last season. I know, He didn't like the questions about the future. He already answered it the day before in the pre-match press conference. Maybe he felt that was not the time. I don't know what he's going to do, if he's going to stay or not. He's 31 years old. If he's going to keep playing with the national team or not. It was just disappointing. I think he was really disappointing. I don't think I think Denmark were far better than Wales, but 4-0 is a heavy defeat. And it's a shame because they did a lot of good things in that tournament, but maybe that showed their limit. They've got a really good young generation. I think 12 players under the age of 25 in the 26. So the future is bright for them, but I think it would still be better if he stick around for a bit longer.
Yeah, the problem is none of those 12 players are named Gareth or Aaron.
No, true, but yeah. You know. The Czech Republic beat Holland 2-0 and are through to the quarterfinals. Gab, was it our friend Frank de Boer's fault?
No, I think we need to give some praise to the Czech Republic.
Come on.
I want to talk about Czech Republic. I'll let you handle de Boer. Look, they were in the right place at the right time. Savchik delivered that tremendous cross. Armand Schick scoring again.
Yep.
Holis, I mean, I think Gini Wijnaldum, who we praised throughout this tournament, who has been really good, I think he's somewhere in Holis's pocket.
He is back.
And then obviously, you know, Matthijs de Ligt getting pushed, the handball, you will always be sent off for that. I don't think there's any question there.
He's got issues with handballs, though. We've seen that with Juventus.
Yeah, we do. He's a big boy, still growing boy.
Not sure what to do with his.
I think that they played. They were much more lively. He's made some changes. Yankto was on the bench this time around. Czech Republic against Denmark. You know, same way Denmark feel good about playing Czech Republic. Czechs feel good about playing Denmark.
Exactly.
But Jules, I bet you're not done talking about de Boer.
He was clueless. Let's not even go over the back three from the beginning. I don't care about group stages and how well they looked and what they won. This is not a formation for them, full stop. He was clueless in that game from the first minute. You could see on his face, he was worried. Things were not going his way. They had no shot on target in the first half. There's the Daniel Malen chance just before the Czech goal in the second half. And of course, if he scores that, but with ifs, as we always say, you know, we would all be world champions. De Boer was clueless. He had no idea how to fix the problems, to find a solution. We talked about solutions before for Italy. He had no idea what to do to enable Wijnaldum to have a better game, the Dutch to have a better game, to find solutions. He changed Promise for Malen. I mean, again, it's a bit the Joao Felix problem that we mentioned with Portugal before. Promise had played 25 minutes the whole tournament before, and now you bring him on, asking him to be the saviour. It doesn't work like this.
Other than that nifty move, didn't do anything?
But maybe it was because the structure around him was not good anyway. When you see it's not working, change something. He had no idea. He was completely clueless from start to finish. Substitutions didn't work. Nothing was working.
See, it did feel like Depay and Wijnaldum, who've helped carry him this far,
completely,
both for different reasons, have bad games. And look, I'm not having a go at them. And they were both very poor.
Yeah.
And then everything falls apart. You need to come up with more.
Exactly, head coach. And we told you from the beginning, he's just not good. He's not a good manager. And we saw that, I guess, the Czech Republic. It's as simple as that. Ukraine and Sweden round out the game on Tuesday, Gab. You're going up there. What do you expect?
I think on paper, this is arguably as finely balanced as Germany and England. I think Sweden look very, very solid. Emil Forsberg has grown up. We both love Isak.
We do.
But I think Ukraine have several levels. They can play better than they have done. They've got quality as well. Maybe Zinchenko will show up as well and increase that. I'm really looking forward to this. I'll be there at Hamburg.
I've kept an Isak in my fantasy team. So you better do something, Alex.
Now, by the time much of our audience gets to this, Spain v. Croatia and France v. Switzerland will be over and consigned to history. So no need to spend too much time talking on this. But Jules, look what I have here. You like my hat? My little Hop Schwitz hat.
Oh, my God.
You talk about how they are neighbors or brothers. I'm going to take this off because this is absolutely ridiculous and hideous hat.
Why did you even keep this in your house?
Sorry?
Why did you keep this in your house? Why has got this in your house?
Because I have a lot of crap stowed away in my locker.
Yeah,
so let me
just
get rid of it.
Giving to charity or somewhere. I expect a France-Spain quarterfinals. I think Switzerland are a good team. They've got good players. I don't think they've got enough.
Do you like the hat?
The French. I don't like the hat.
Okay, fine. Let's move on.
The Football Association is passing new legislation, Gab, that would allow them to stop the threat of a Super League. What can they actually really
do? Well, they
do?
Control the visas that clubs can... that they have a deal with the government, so they control the visas. They say, like, oh, we'll just... If an English club goes and joins a Super League, we'll just block their visas
so, you don't
so they can't sign foreign players. Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty clever, huh?
Oh.
And now, stay tuned for another exciting episode of, quote, As the Spurs Turn, a confusing look into the world of Tottenham's managerial hunt. Now, the latest is that Nuno Espirito Santo back in contention, and Brighton's Graham Potter would reportedly turn them down if offered the job. Plus, he'd cost a whopping $15 million in compensation.
Okay, I don't have a problem with the money. If you want a manager and you have to pay for it. Nagelsmann.
But he would turn them down because they're not top four.
Okay, that exactly. That makes more sense.
But Nuno, you like Nuno?
You can't have Nuno. He's like your 12th choice. He doesn't even fit what you wanted. He doesn't tick any of the boxes.
But that's okay, because Nuno, you get Uncle George back.
Exactly. Paratici would be happy with that. It's the tension we mentioned before. It's official. UEFA have abolished the away goals rule in European competition. Gab, is the right decision? I think both you and I are happy.
Absolutely, 100%.
Thank you.
I'm not saying this because we had weird situations last year where, you know, games are played on the same ground because of COVID, and in some cases they count, in some cases they didn't count. The game has moved on.
Yep.
People defend differently. We're in a better place now. It's a much more level playing field. Away goals is a purely arbitrary way of deciding this, and unfair. So this time, well done. By the time you listen to this, it could be official. Achraf Hakimi to Paris Saint-Germain for 70 million euros. Jules, you're excited.
Yeah.
Who got the better of this deal, Inter or Paris Saint-Germain?
This is a deal where you shake hands and you're both happy.
It's a win-win,
It's a win-win. That all deals should be like this, really, Gab. Inter got the money they wanted. PSG paid 60 plus 10 in add-ons. That, I think, for one of the best fullbacks, whether he's a wing-back or full or right-back, let's call him a fullback.
Wait, now it's only 60 plus 10?
It's 60 plus 10.
I like this deal less and less for Inter. I'm sorry.
Come on, man. What would you expect? No one would have paid more than that.
Yeah, but
no one else made a bid, by the way.
Don't
not
sell
Chelsea.
Any.
You have to. Who do you sell then? You have
Lautaro.
To.
Lautaro.
Lautaro has no market. Doesn't have the market that Achraf has.
I just think if the goal of this was to bring in cash, right? Just cash rather than. Because you're not bringing in amortized value. I love that word. Because obviously you only bought him a year ago. I don't know. I just think he might be more valuable for you on the pitch. I think he's a huge upside, but
I don't know. I think they would all be happy with it. And he's certainly very happy to join one of the greatest teams in the world. Reports in Italy, Gab, suggest that Inter are now after Hector Bellerin to replace Hakimi. Is that a good idea? I mean, you don't look that inspired. We're not comparing Bellerin to Hakimi.
We can't. Like my first instinct is to say, I know for a fact this story. And the sad thing is, it's probably true.
Yeah.
I haven't checked, but I know that it's Bellerin's people who are pushing this. Right, he has his own agency and so on. Okay, so message to what's it called? Whatever it is called, right? And by the way, I like Hector Bellerin a lot. I know people know him personally. He's a very good person.
He's a great guy, just a
model pro, right?
He just didn't have the season that Hakimi had. That's all.
Somebody needs to tell them that Antonio Conte is gone from Inter. So the guy who replaced him is not a fetishist for Premier League players on big contracts that Inter can't afford, who their Premier League clubs are trying to move them on. Because that is the situation with Bellerin. Bellerin's contract is entering that stage where if he's going to stay at Arsenal, he needs to extend it. Evidently, Arsenal either aren't willing to extend it or haven't yet extended it on the terms that he wants.
Yeah.
So, what, he's going to go camp out at Inter? Does this talk of a loan, option to buy? No, I think...
I don't think so.
I think Inter, I don't think he's a right fit for Inter. Inter are going to play 3-5-2. I know, theoretically, people view him as this tremendous attacking wingback. He's not. In my opinion, I think he's a defensive fullback. He's like a smaller Azpilicueta. am I wrong? Which is a fine defender in the right system.
Yeah.
But not in this system.
Small Azpilicueta.
He is smaller than Azpilicueta, right?
He's smaller.
And Azpilicueta used to be, people forget this, he used to be quite an attacking fullback
when he
was younger, right?
Yeah, even Marseille, yeah.
Then obviously later, now he's turned into a defensive fullback, which is what Bellerin in theory should be, right? Just a small one. Let's stick with Arsenal. They've been linked with Ben White in an enormous deal. Jules, first and foremost, this tells me my buddy William Saliba needs to be very patient.
But you don't know. I think if the rotation is Saliba, Gabriel and Ben White, I'm happy with that.
And then you've got fourth, Chambers.
You've got fourth who is holding, and then that's four centre backs.
Because he's going to play a back three, right?
I don't know where he's going to play, but
I hope he knows because it's nearly July.
Well, I think he does know, but why would he play with a back three if you've got four centre backs? You can have four centre backs and play with a back four. Doesn't matter. You've got just, you know, two starters and then two who can come in who have a slightly different profile. I think Saliba, as you know, deserves a chance. I think Gabriel has been good at times in his first season in England, will be better next season, no doubt. I think Ben White, it's a lot of money. I think he's a really good defender, very good on the ball, which I think is what they're looking for. More than a super solid, good in the air, good in the challenges centre back.
What's a realistic price for Ben White in this pandemic football economy?
Not 50 million, though. That's all I can say. But sometimes you have to overpay a bit. Like, you think that PSG overpaid for Hakimi.
No, I don't think they overpaid. Well, looking at Paris Saint-Germain's number, I want to make sure I can keep Mbappe. That's more of a priority for me than signing Hakimi, but whatever. I don't think it's worth Inter letting him go because I think he is that special a talent.
No, you're right.
I mean, that's a difference there.
The Mirror reports that Raheem Sterling is annoyed that Manchester City want to send him to Spurs in part exchange for the Harry Kane deal. Gabby's got 2 years left on his current contract. How seriously should we take this? And you can understand why he's a bit...
Okay, so a couple annoyed. Things here. This whole part exchange, in England, because this is a relatively new phenomenon, they use the term make weight. Now, make weight has very negative connotation.
It's like, right? Oh, you're rubbish, so we
exactly, you. Right? So I think that would put him in a bad mood if he heard this.
Yeah.
The reality is he's got 2 years left. He needs to think about his future. He needs to think about extending his deal. Maybe those negotiations aren't going great. And so if I'm City, I say, hey, look, you know, you want 150 million, 130 million. Look, we can stick Sterling in there, value him at 60, 70 million or whatever, and then, you know, you get cash and you get a guy who is a very good player.
Yeah.
You know, didn't have the greatest season, but he's had plenty of good seasons before. I don't think you should be annoyed by it. I mean, be more annoyed if he doesn't get the contract he wants and they sell him somewhere else, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But again, you know my feelings on this. I don't think, if from Spurs' perspective, they don't even have a manager. So they're in no position to judge whether it makes sense to take on Sterling and Sterling's contract, because he's going to want to raise and you're going to have to sign him to a new deal if you take him. So I don't even think they can begin to value this. They could even start thinking about Harry Kane. And as I told you, I think it's highly unlikely Harry Kane moves this summer. I could be wrong.
Yeah,
but I think it's highly...
No.
Everything
I said it's 50-50.
It.
I said it's 50-50.
More City, Jules.
Yeah.
They're linked with Jack Grealish.
Oh.
Now, is he a Pep type?
Well, yes and no. I think no in the sense that it's a bit like Riyad Mahrez, who, you know, maybe stays on the ball a bit too long for Pep's liking. But then that brings you something a bit different to your team and the way the team is playing, which is not a bad thing, I think. And we saw that with Mahrez. It's very similar to...
It's a really good analogy, because Mahrez was most definitely not a Pep player.
Exactly.
And then he became a Pep player.
Yeah. And I think he's very similar. And to me, it looks so much like the Mahrez deal. Maybe the best winger in the Premier League at the time, very different to the players that usually Pep signs or goes for, what he had in the team. You spend a lot of money, 60 million on Mahrez at the time was a lot of money, like 100 million on Grealish would be now, especially with the pandemic. But hey, if they have the money, I think he would bring something very special and very different to this team and make them even stronger.
Do you think if they sign Grealish, then they can also go for an A-list centre forward, or does the A-list automatically move to 2022?
It seems, and certainly what our colleague Rob Dawson was writing last week, that it's both potentially, that they think they have the money for both. We know that financial fair play this summer is a bit looser, let's put it that way, if that's the right word, would you agree?
Technically it's suspended, but it's not like it's gone away for in perpetuity.
Yeah.
It will come back.
So I think if there's one summer when you can just go over the top a bit, it's this one. So go for it. And if they sign Grealish and Kane, I mean... This would be incredible. It would be incredible. I don't know how realistic it is. I think it's more realistic that they can sign Grealish than Kane. I think Kane, I agree with you, is a far tougher deal. Grealish, if you're Villa, is you know, he's been at your club forever, is your club captain. I think it's hard to deny him this opportunity to go and play for Pep with Man City, play in the Champions League, then keep him and just close the door.
The one thing I would say is I would just view it a little bit as a numbers game. In the sense that you want to give Foden more minutes even than he had last season, where, you know, he became a de facto regular, right? But there's going to be, he demands minutes. Bernardo Silva's still there, and we know that, you know, Pep does like him.
Yeah.
De Bruyne, you hope, is going to be fit at some point. And you have Mahrez. And you have Sterling.
Yeah, but as we know, Sterling's position is a bit uncertain.
It's just, I'm saying is, you've got five people. You've got, unless you just decide not to play a center forward, which is possible too, but then you're not going to sign Kane and not play center forward. I just wonder, in terms of squad management, you know, does this perhaps herald that they might be making a painful decision with somebody else at some point?
Yeah, maybe. The Times are reporting that West Bromwich Albion, who, by the way, Gab, just appointed my friend Valerian Ismaël, who did a really good job with Barnsley last season.
Former Palace legend.
Yeah, exactly. The Times are reporting that West Bromwich allegedly attempted to negotiate an illicit transfer to China to benefit their owner. What story is that?
So, like, obviously this is all alleged. The Times felt confident enough to report this and to name names, which is why I'm bringing it up. But I'm also bringing it up to talk about one of the risks that come in when you have these sort of top-down restrictions. So in China, as you know, they passed, essentially, they introduced a salary cap, and they also introduced a law which says that if you sign a foreign player for more than $5 million, for every million on top of that you spend, you have to you have to chuck in $1 million, or for every, let's say, dollar more than you spend, you have to put a dollar into this central development fund for Chinese players, which is it's essentially a form of luxury tax.
Yeah.
Right? So inevitably, people are going to get around that. And what the Times are alleging is they're alleging that the West Brom owner said, you know, he was going to sell Mateus Pereira to a team in China, and he says, like, all right, you can have Pereira for $5 million. And then separately, man who owns this team in China will give me $25 million, so that we both, you know, save money on the deal. And this is what happens when you introduce artificial caps, when you don't have enough oversight. Now, I think they deny the allegation so far. I don't know if there's been an inquiry. It is a pretty extraordinary story, though.
It is, yeah.
Brazil, I've already qualified, so they send out the B team and draw with Ecuador 1-1 in the Copa America. It's okay, Jules, right?
Yeah, B team, but they played like an E team. It was dreadful, and they drew 1-1, as you said. They're sure to finish top of the group.
No Gabigol miracles this time?
Not this time. He had a chance in the first half that was saved. They would play the team that finished fourth in the other group, the Argentina group, which, by the way, we don't know yet the order, because pretty much everybody in that, we know the top four, because we know that Bolivia are out, but we don't know who will finish first, second, third, or fourth. So there's still a lot to play in those last two games for all those teams: Argentina, Colombia, Paraguay, and Uruguay. But you could have a Uruguay Brazil in the quarterfinals if Uruguay stay in the fourth place where they are now, which we're making quite cool.
And how about Vamos Venezuela?
Yes, and Venezuela, who qualified.
That's pretty remarkable, given what they've been through, right?
Exactly, with their B team or C team, because half of their team staff got COVID right before the start of the tournament. So well done to them. And I think that those quarterfinals will be exciting, Gab. Erling Haaland has spent a good chunk of his summer in Greece, in Mykonos, and he's been dealing with a lot of criticism for his dress sense, to start with, and all those Louis Vuitton pyjamas. They look like pyjamas. And some fake news as well.
I guess this is what happens when you become a superstar and you decide not to go and hide away someplace surrounded by security.
It's a very public holiday.
It's a very public holiday. I got no problem with it whatsoever. If he enjoys wearing unusual clothes, that's fine. Now, they're not, I mean, I think the other thing with him is that they look a little unusual on him because he looks unusual.
And
because
he's so big, yeah.
He's so big and so blonde and so, but, you know, whatever. He's a kid, right? Let him do this.
Yeah.
Best that he gets used to it now. The story about the fake news, which he called out, was some story that said that he had spent €500,000 having lunch somewhere on Mykonos in the course of 4 hours. I'd left a €30,000 tip. Now, unless he was inviting hundreds and hundreds of people.
How'd you spend €500,000 on a lunch?
Unless you're buying like vintage Dom Perignon and just chucking it into the sea, I don't understand how you can possibly spend €500,000.
Unless it's your wedding and it's a lunch for your wedding.
But your wedding, you presume you're going to invite a lot. You still got to invite a lot of people.
Yeah. It's a ridiculous story.
But look, Erling, you know this, you're going to get more of stories. That's only the more start. Stories
That's
like
only
this.
The beginning.
This is only the start.
Yeah.
And I think eventually people reach some sort of balance in, you know, out in public. But right now, look, he has a summer off because Norway didn't qualify for the Euros. I think he'll be hoping this will be one of his last ever summers off like yeah. this. Enjoy the Greek islands, man. It's a beautiful part of the world. The great Lionel Messi countdown clock continues. Jules, by my calculation, less yeah. than 60 hours to go until his Barcelona contract expires and he becomes unemployed.
Unemployed. God, can you imagine? Surely, all the rumors we're hearing, all the noise about he's agreed the new deal, and that would be official very soon.
Hey, look, I think
that could happen between now and before the contract really expires, the current one.
The only reason that this matters, obviously he can go and, I mean, he can extend his deal. He can deal with a couple months without getting paid, right? He can go and extend his deal.
Yeah, I think he's got enough.
The day before the window closes for a week here. The only thing is, it does change the leverage in the negotiating because all of a sudden, if he doesn't have a contract till July 1st and other people come talk to him, you know, they could plant ideas. I think the longer this goes on, it's
But it's not really going
favor.
On, Gab. He's had an offer on the table, I think. It's pretty fair to say that he's on board, I think, with the new offer and that he's going to...
That's what I expect too. But
yeah.
I don't know. I don't like this. I just want him locked
no,
down
you're right.
at the camp now where he belongs.
But he's also playing in Copa America in Brazil right now. You know, there's other priorities too. You know, there right. is. There is. Gab, tell me about the magic sunglasses that Swiss goalkeepers are training with. What's this?
You're afraid, huh?
Are they going to beat France with their sunglasses?
I saw the video. No, they're like these Japanese-made sunglasses. I saw Jan Sommer wearing them. And basically what they do is they're intelligent sunglasses, and intermittently they block your vision. So they train with them on where you'll have like a split second where all of a sudden it just goes dark.
Well, it's a flash kind of thing. And then
yeah, yeah, and then you're supposed to react, supposed to help.
Nice.
I don't know. We'll find out after the France yeah, game if they had the desired effect. But Jules, all right, we got to come back on we're going to be back a day early on Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Yes, that's right. After the conclusion of the round of 16s. Yep. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.